You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Well, hey, here we are, episode number 59 of the world-famous Chick Whisperer podcast. Got a big show for you guys today, and I tell you what, I've been trying to track down my co-host today for a couple years. I have no idea, I have no excuse, actually, for why he hasn't been a co-host on this show yet, because probably 24 of you guys have written in over the last few years saying, you want this guy to be on this show with me. So today, we're going to have him on the show as a co-host. He comes to us from Seattle, Washington. Dr. Robert Glover of No More Mr. Nice Guy fame. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing stellar, man. It's a beautiful autumn afternoon here in San Antonio. I'm sure it's the same up in Seattle where you are, right?
It's a great, cloudy, drizzly day in Seattle, and that's why I'm already thinking about heading back down to Mexico.
Yeah, there you go. You're Puerto Vallarta by wintertime.
Right? I live in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico half the year, and Seattle area half the year, so it worked out real nice.
Hey, man, rainy, foggy, drizzly in Seattle is a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, just not year-round.
Go down to the Pike Place Fish Market, watch them throw fish around.
Of course.
Drink some Starbucks.
Of course.
Good life, man.
It's not bad.
I was there just recently. Yeah. Well, what we're going to talk about today, I bet guys are expecting we're going to talk about how to be no more Mr. Nice Guy. Well, you've been talking about that for at least a decade, and you came to me with a topic that you wanted to address today that was a little bit off the board, but still related, I'm sure. And that's living in your conscious masculine. How can you be this guy who is really conscious, you know, alive, present in the fact that he is not just a human being going through life, having been born with male chromosomes, but is actually acting like a man, proceeding like a man, thinking like a man, doing what a man should. Am I covering it?
We're doing great and doing that in a very conscious way.
Yep. Good stuff. But first, before we get to that, we've got a voicemail from your namesake, Robert, in Indiana, Robert, and he's got a question that I think is just absolutely stellar, and you know what? I've been saving it for a podcast just like this one. Let's roll.
Hi, Scott. This is Robert from Bluffton, Indiana. I am sure many of your listeners have children of their own. I often think about how to be a proper model for my future sons and daughters on relating to women. Scott, you speak constantly of being a big four man. How are you condensing or altering those concepts down to a level your own sons can understand? I have spent many years learning the proper way to relate to women, and I want to give my sons every advantage I can, both in dating and in finding a great, high-quality woman. But that starts with simply being a big four man, or maybe I should say a level four boy. How would you advise to set down a legacy of integrity in our own families? I hope this question will be a useful topic for the show. Thank you, seriously, for all the wonderful advice you give.
Well, you know, Robert, when you get right down to it, this is a how do I raise my sons to be men question. He's talking about it in context of being a big four man, which for you guys listening, once again, is being confident, being masculine in the way women define it, as opposed to, you know, machismo, doing wheelies, drinking beer, you know, things we do as guys to impress each other. Third one being making her feel safe and comfortable in your presence, kind of inspiring confidence in her so that she'll know you're the kind of guy who has her best interests at heart and that you're a protector, not the opposite. In other words, you're part of her safety and security solution, not her problem. And then the fourth is long-term, and that's character. That's how you keep a great woman around long-term. So yeah, man, those kind of things we want to instill in our sons. How would you go about literally helping your little boy, Robert, to get on the track well on his way to being a real man someday at an early age?
Well, I'm going to speak to that from personal experience. I raised my biological son and I raised a stepson who are now both in their late 20s. The core answer that I'm going to say in terms of Robert's question is that you teach your sons through how you live, how you treat their mother, how you treat them, how you penetrate the world. We're going to be talking a little bit about that in this podcast in terms of conscious masculine, but about how you do your life, how you live your life. And you mentioned those four pillars, the big four, man, is that if you're living your life in that way, your sons are going to see that and they're going to model that. And if you spend time with your sons doing what you do in life and they get to be with you, be present with you as you consciously penetrate the world as a competent man, a masculine man, a man that understands that he's supposed to be the protector and provider and a man of character, the boys will see it. And I'm not even sure you have to teach them a lot verbally. Like, say, be this way, son, or do it this way. Now, it is helpful to give that, of course, but the more powerful message is how you live your life day in, day out.
Yeah, I would agree 1,000% with that. I love the part about how you treat his mother. He'll be watching. You know, the beauty of that is you're teaching him how to relate to women at the high quality level, not pick up, not, you know, seduction. Although, you know, you can seduce mom around the house a little bit.
Well, I hope so. And I agree with you that I've often heard it said the best gift you can give to your children is to love their mom, love their dad, depending on which one you are. That's the best gift you can give. And I'll give two quick anecdotes, two quick stories. I do a recorded visualization in some of my courses where I have guys visualize being 4 or 5 years old, walking into the living room of their childhood home, seeing their mother and dad sitting on the couch, holding hands, having a warm conversation. They see the young man, call him over, climbs up in dad's lap. Dad puts his arm around him. Mom's, you know, gives him a kiss. They plan a picnic. They go on a picnic. They tuck him in. It's, you know, it's a little bit longer than that. But it's just a visualization to help men kind of re-experience what it feels like to be nurtured and loved and have your parents be attentive to you and meet your needs. And the most consistent response I get from men is that they say that was unbelievable. They just couldn't even visualize it. And the one part that they most often say is the most unbelievable part is seeing their mother and father being affectionate towards each other. And that, if you think about that, how sad is that of how many men grow up, how many boys grow up from boyhood to manhood, and they don't have a visual of their mother and father being loving, affectionate, caring, concerned about each other.
I think sometimes parents really err on the side of being super conservative. We can't obviously let our young children see us being sexual with each other. So we don't even want to allude to that. We don't want to hold hands. We don't want to have any PDA whatsoever in front of the children. But I'll tell you what, every single one of our kids, you know, I wasn't there when Emily's son was very young, young enough to do what I'm talking about. But certainly my daughters and my son, whenever I embrace their mother, they come running and want to be a part of that. And we'd pick them up and have like a group hug. And my little daughter right now is just under 2 years old and she just craves that. She loves that. She'll come up to me and start hugging my leg and then point to mom, you know, almost like, can we do this group hug thing? It's incredibly important to demonstrate true, positive, real affection for each other, if not overt sexuality, of course.
And I was just going to say, and that begins with you actually liking your partner, because I've been a marriage therapist for close to 30 years, and I've seen couples come into my office with horrendous problems. I mean, they really had some big issues, but yet you could tell they liked each other and they had a sense of humor towards each other. And I'm optimistic when I see that. And I've had couples come into my office with seemingly trivial, minor issues going on. And it was obvious they didn't like each other. They didn't have a sense of humor about each other. And I'm not at all optimistic about their chances of pulling a successful relationship out of that. So that'd be the number one answer I'd give to a dad, is like and love your children's mother. And that is so core.
Yeah, I like I said, I couldn't agree more. I think listening to you talk also, Robert, that's just as important for our daughters. Our daughters have to see an image of what a good man looks like. I mean, you hear all these stories about girls who, you know, go in wayward directions and don't have self-esteem and turn out doing less than virtuous things or just being unhappy or getting into wrong relationships. A lot of times it goes back to there wasn't a dad at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, dads are so important. I mean, we're being trivialized in modern culture almost as if we don't even matter. But I think that's almost an indictment of how few guys actually care, and sort of like a concession towards that. And I want us to fight that. We belong in the lives of our children. We have a huge integral part to play in the raising of our children, for sure. It's always been that way.
And yeah, I say amen to that. And perhaps as we talk about conscious masculine and feminine today, we can talk about how to overcome this cultural trend that you reference of where masculine men have disappeared from our vision, whether it be in the media, whether it just be in day-to-day life. The good news is I think this trend is reversing. I think, and we can talk more about that, but we went through a phase. I'm currently, as we record this podcast, I'm 57 years old. I was born in the mid-50s, and I grew up during the 60s and 70s where there's a lot of negative messages about men and masculinity, to where I grew up feeling ashamed to be a man. And I, luckily, that trend is changing, where I think the idea of being a masculine, being a provider, protector, being men of character, being men that are actually making the world a better place rather than making it a worse place. And one of the things I've been teaching for a few years now, and will be the content of my next book, is men showing up and setting the tone and taking the lead in their intimate relationships. And that's a concept that a lot of people kind of at first get a little bit uncomfortable about, because they think, well, we're going back to old school 1940s, 1950s, man's head of the household, king of his castle, and you know, they say how high when he says jump. We're not talking about that. We're talking about men showing up with consciousness, love, and compassion, and actually setting the tone and leading in family, with their children, in the workplace, and in the world at large. And I'm really optimistic about the changing trend that I actually have seen over the last just recent few years.
I agree. And we should be confident as we teach our young boys, our sons, to be men, that that world is still going to be there and welcome them in the future as they become young adults. I'll tell you, with my son right now, I'm in the midst of exactly what Robert was talking about here. He's 5 years old and he's just hitting kindergarten and he's just learning how to be in school and have a teacher and be around other kids all day, even when he's getting tired and cranky at the end of the day, and how he's got to act. And I think there's some utility in not only demonstrating to a son like that, my little boy or your little boy or anybody listening, what it's like to be a real man, and really realizing that he's watching you all the time. And when you mess up, admit to him you mess up and tell him what you should have done. Apologize to him first and the mom and whoever else you need to if you mess it up, so he has that teachable moment. But also, I do think there are times when they start doing things they shouldn't be doing that aren't very masculine, that maybe would lead to bad habits in the future, that you got to correct them on. I don't want to throw my little boy under the bus, but in general, lots of little boys, especially when they start watching some of these cartoon shows, the one that comes to mind for me is that gosh darn Caillou show out of Canada. Man, I think the Canadians have this communist plot to convert all of us into wussy boys. Man, that little boy just whines and cries and sulks on that show constantly. I've banned my kids from watching it because, you know, they'll watch these shows and they'll be whiners. And then my little boy will start whining and complaining and not wanting to do things and stomping his feet. And I tell him, hey, look, man, that's not what a cool little dude does. And I encourage him. I say, here's what you need to do instead. It's great to be this guy. Another thing that I've done is I have just said no to being overprotective of my children, because my parents were very overprotective of me. And by the time I got into middle school, I would see my peers doing things that I wasn't allowed to do. And it really weighed on my self-esteem. It's like, well, I must not be as well equipped as these other kids to withstand whatever it is they can do. I can't handle it, but they can. And it caused really a rift in my self-image. What I want is I want my son not to be scared and to think that he's not worthy of these experiences. I want him to feel like if he wants to go have an adventure, you know, we're going to provide for him as safe an environment as he can to go do it. But we're not going to constantly be fearing that he falls off the bike and scrapes his knee.
Yeah, you really do have to give them space to go have that adventure. And as we talk about masculine and feminine, one of the things that I often say is that the world of the masculine is scary. I mean, it is scary. It is rough. It is violent. To penetrate the world and make a difference, you put yourself at risk. And one of the things I see that has happened with so many men in our culture nowadays is we haven't had strong, conscious, masculine men initiate us into that scary world. And most guys my age and below grew up primarily influenced by women. We were raised by our moms, many men raised by single moms. We got into elementary school. It was primarily female. In my workshops, I'll ask guys, how many male teachers did you have between kindergarten and junior high? And the average is about 1.5 male teachers. So that means that for most guys, getting from third grade to fourth grade not only involved learning reading and writing arithmetic, it was about how to please a woman. So what happens for a lot of men is that we get really comfortable being in what I call the nursery, hanging out with women, hanging out with all that kind of nice estrogen and emotional, closeness and warm energy. And we're afraid to take risk. We're afraid to do something bold. And whether you apply this to a dad parenting his kids or to a dating context, I tell men that reward is won through risk. And most of the guys I work with that are bad daters just won't take a risk. And risk is masculine. And I agree with you 100%. For a boy to learn to take risk, to be vulnerable, to challenge himself, to get out of his comfort zone, he'll do it better if he has a conscious male helping him do that. Because in general, the feminine is a security-seeking creature. And it's going to teach the little boy, be scared, be afraid, don't take risk. And if you hang out in the nursery, those are the messages you get from the feminine creatures in the nursery. Don't take a risk. Stay close to home. Don't venture out. You might get hurt. It might break. It might go south. So we need men to teach our sons how to take those risks and show them through our own lifestyle that reward in life is won through risk.
Thinking that way and guiding their children that way, male or female children, is natural for a woman. That's how she sees the world. She looks at her direction to a son to be safe and be secure and completely understands that to be the right thing to teach him. And she's not wrong to teach him that. It's just that she is in the feminine talking to a little boy, teaching him how to be a masculine man, and that's not the right context. She's just not the right person for the job. Just like, when I was a single parent with my daughter, I was not a good feminine role model. Now, she stayed with me for a time, and I showed her hopefully a little bit more of the kind of man she would hopefully like to marry someday. What's good about men, in other words. But man, I had no idea what hair conditioner was for. None of that stuff. All I could do was be dad for her. I couldn't be mom for her. And see, I think we as guys recognize that. If for no other reason, Robert, then we've had that drilled into our mind by second wave feminist culture for decades now. Women, on the other hand, I think they've been taught, hey, look, you can get this. You got it. You can do this. As a woman, you can teach this little boy exactly what he needs. You don't need some man around. Well, kind of to put a little punctuation sign at the end of this sentence for how to raise sons to become men, one of the most important ways you can do that, Robert, in Indiana, is to really apprise the woman in his life, his mom, or you have a stepmom, whoever it is who's the woman in his life, demonstrating to that little boy what it's like to be a great woman. Let her in on all this. Explain to her with leadership what the importance is of, not necessarily imposing feminine on this little boy all the time. Not that she's even trying to, like I've stated, but help her in on this leadership that you're giving that little boy. Help her help you. Help her reinforce in that little boy what masculinity is by supporting you as his masculine role model. Hope that makes sense, because what you're doing is you're giving leadership to the woman and the little boy that, hey, you know what? I am making a safe and secure environment around here. I know what I'm doing. I've got a plan, which is, of course, masculine. I'm going to teach courage, at a childhood level to this little boy. I'm going to show him what it's like to be a man. And I don't want you to fear, Mom. I don't want you to fear, little dude. I've got this. I'm going to show you, and it'll be good. In the case of Emily, my wife, she was a single mom for several years. And before that, dare I say, her previous husband didn't give a whole lot of attention to being this male role model that we're speaking of. So by the time I met her stepson, there was a little heavy lifting to be doing. And I didn't want to replace dad, but I did want to talk to mom about, what can I do to help her son along this path to manhood? And once my son was born, of course, I could take a much more direct role. And I've shown Emily how important it is for me to raise him in the ways of manhood. And she's behind that 100%. And now that we have a little daughter right behind my son, I'm doing the same for her. I'm supporting her in showing that little girl what it means to be a woman. And, you know, it just works. It's like hand in glove. It's a great way to be. But, you know, this whole thing is predicated on having such a solid relationship with the significant other in your life. I think that's absolutely paramount. And it, you know, really just comes full circle back to that.
Well, let me give two specific examples that might help Robert and might help the men listening. As I said, I raised a son and a stepson. I got involved in my stepson's life when he was about three. So I raised him as the primary male influence, and he still would see me as that in his late 20s. But one of the things I realized is that not only did I have to help initiate my sons into the scary world of the masculine, but I had to do other things. And one of them was I had to teach them how to have good boundaries around themselves. Because if you look at what I call the lower masculine, the unconscious masculine, the patriarchal masculine that's done great damage to this world and to women and children, the controlling, angry, aggressive, abusive man, is that what happens is that the way that men can be destructive is usually two ways. One, through our libido, and one through just aggression. And if you combine libido and aggression together, men have the capability of being really destructive. So what happens if a boy's raised by a woman, she'll want to put a lid on both of those things because they tend to scare her, because maybe she's seen the destructiveness of an adult male's libido or an adult male's aggressiveness. And so a woman will just try to put a lid on them altogether. And basically, you've just created a wussy little boy if he has no aggression and no libido. And I saw my job as a man, and I did talk with my wife when I was married to her about this. And luckily, she and I were on the same page. This is one area that worked well in our marriage. Other areas didn't, but this one did. When it came to parenting, I told her, listen, when it comes to the boy's behavior, I'll be the one to set the boundaries and discipline them. I don't want you doing it. Because, for example, both of my boys would spit. Now, I didn't spit much growing up because I guess I was a little nice boy, but they would spit. Now, to the woman's going to go, that's gross. Why do you have to spit? And so the boy internalizes shame about a masculine behavior. I saw my job is, instead of telling them don't spit, is to teach them where it was okay to spit and in what context. So I didn't try to take away any part of their masculine self. I taught them a way to have it in a healthy, boundaried conscious space. And even when it came to swearing and the kind of music they listened to as they got to be teenagers, teenage boys are going to swear. They're going to listen to music that's maybe aggressive and even misogynistic. And I would talk to them about it. I'd tell them the appropriate time and place for being verbal in that way or when they listen to their music. And I said, if it's loud enough for your mom to hear, turn it off, turn it down. So I gave them the freedom to kind of go through that phase and with some boundaries around it, whereas their mother would have just said, you know, don't swear or don't listen to that kind of music. And they came through that pretty well. So that's another big part, in addition to initiation, is that we have to teach them about boundaries and let them know when they've crossed a line and lost consciousness, so to speak, and maybe become too aggressive, or that their libido is actually being destructive rather than engaging in a loving, you know, connecting way with another person. So keep that in mind, too. Whereas the feminine might want to put a lid on all these male traits, part of our job as a parent is to help our sons embrace them, see them as a positive thing about being male, but to have them in a good container.
You know, it's funny you should mention spitting. I was talking about this with someone just the other day. Does everybody born male, when confronted with a urinal in the men's bathroom, have to spit in the urinal while they're peeing?
You know, I think yes. Here's what I've read. I can't document it, but I've read that male saliva has testosterone in it. And apparently it is an animal way of marking territory to spit.
And pee.
So, you know, we'll leave it at that. But apparently there is some biological reason why we mark our territory in those ways.
Every dude I know spits in the urinal when he pees. Even when you're standing there, you watch all the guys around you spit in the urinal, especially like at sports games with a bunch of like macho guys. Every time. I don't know if you go to an art museum or some, you know, hoity-toity place if it's going to be like that. But geez, man, whenever you have like dudes around, always spitting in there.
So yeah, our job is to teach our boys to be dudes, but to do it in the urinal rather than in the inappropriate places.
Or when playing baseball.
There you go.
Yeah, get you some sunflower seeds, man. I do that on trips. I'll sit there and spit sunflower seeds because I don't want to munch while I'm driving. You know, I just don't want the calories. Man, my wife has had to learn to endure that because I'll just take the spit cup and start spitting sunflower seeds while I'm driving.
Yeah, it could be worse.
I know, it could be a lot worse. Well, with that, I think we're actually segueing into the next part of our conversation, which is living in this conscious masculine. We've already hit on a lot of that because, Robert, in Indiana, your question is so in tune with today's topic that it's just almost amazing. It just makes for such a complete, full conversation. But before we actually make that official movement into the meat and potatoes of this program, I do want to make sure I give you a prize. What I want to do for you, Robert, in Indiana, is give you a copy of The Leading Man. This is my most popular program ever, and the reason why I'm giving it to you is because it contains everything you need to know about how to manage a great relationship with a great woman once you find that woman someday. You kind of alluded into a part of the voicemail that I edited for this show that you hadn't found her yet. So if you other guys want to know what to do after the pickup phase, after you have her on a first date, if you decide you want to keep her around, this is the definitive toolkit on how to do that. And Robert, in Indiana, you're going to get your very own copy of that. It's a $97 value. And if you guys want to check it out for yourself, go to www.theleadingman.info. That's theleadingman.info. And get you some. And by the way, we need your voicemails. If you want to leave a voicemail for this show, please do the following. Step number one, call +1 if you're outside the United States. Area code 210-362-4400. That's +1. 210-362-4400. When you call that number, you don't have to worry about a human being answering, even if it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Go ahead and listen to the intro. Leave a question that is something that will be relatable to the vast majority of guys who are listening to this program, or at least a very large cross-section of them. Be very clear. And when you're done, leave your name and your voicemail address, and be sure to spell your voicemail address out so that we can send you your killer cool prize once your voicemail is selected for this show. So with that, let's go ahead and move into talking about living in the conscious masculine. One of the things that I've actually heard you talk about is something that I've often said myself, almost in the exact same context that you have. And that's this idea of masculinity being a man's birthright, and we need to go reclaim it. I mean, that is pretty much the tagline I use for my program, The Master Plan. What is it that we have a birthright to? What does it mean to be masculine in the way that we were intended to be?
Well, I'm going to break it down really simple. I just did a workshop in New York City just this last weekend. So I did 6 hours on how to live in your conscious masculine. But it really is very simple. And it is so simple, it's almost scary or makes us uncomfortable. And I'm going to even preface what I'm going to talk about is that when I talk with women about these concepts, women nod their head and get it. When I talk with men about these concepts, men get scared. Oh no, I'm going to be that bad guy. I'm going to be like my father. I'm going to be like those, quote, asshole men that I've heard women complain about. And that's why I talk about being in your conscious masculine, because it is possible to be an asshole man. But we're going to talk about how to be in conscious masculine. So it's this simple. It is going to blow you away how simple it is. The masculine does. The masculine does. The masculine penetrates. And you can just even think about it from a physiological term, but we're talking about emotionally and energetically as well as physical. And the feminine is done too, or is penetrated. Now, we can think about it again physiologically, or we can think about it emotionally or energetically, but it's that simple. And I'm going to expand on that as we talk in terms of what that looks like to be in our masculine, what it looks like to be in our feminine, and what it looks like to be consciously in our masculine and feminine, because we all have masculine qualities, we all have feminine qualities, and I'm going to make a generalization, and I always tell people up front, I talk in generalities. If it doesn't fit, fine, but here's the generality. Most straight men are more masculine than feminine, and most straight women are more feminine than masculine. Now, we live in a culture, and we've talked some about this already, we can talk about it some more. We've lived in a culture where masculine was seen as bad. Gloria Steinem said, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And she went on and married a rich guy later on. But so we heard all these messages, men are bad. You know, men are the cause of all the problems in the world. Feminine is good. Females are good. But yet we've been teaching our daughters actually to be more masculine and go out and kick ass and be aggressive and go have a career, basically to be doers. Now, women, even though they're maybe primarily feminine, can be doers and do very well. But in general, most men walking the planet are going to be more masculine and feminine. Most women walking the planet are going to be more feminine than masculine.
Fair enough. I absolutely agree with that. And this whole part about penetrating and women being penetrated, I think that's probably why we as men feel so violated when a guy alphas us, when a guy penetrates us. You know, we even have the colloquialism, you know, treat someone like your bitch. Like, hey, you know, our sports team just beat down this other team and made them their bitch and stuff like that. That is one of the worst insults a guy can ever face.
Well,
so, yeah.
Even if he's not facing it from another guy, to face it from a woman. And that's part of what I've seen happen a lot. And as we talk more about the masculine and feminine, my work with men, working with nice guys, is that most of the men I work with that have read my book and come, you know, do a workshop with me or join one of my groups or do therapy, most of the guys I work with are living in what I call their lower feminine. And we'll get to that in a minute. I'll describe a little bit about what that is. And so because most of the guys I work with are in their lower feminine, they tend to be attracted to women that are actually living in their lower masculine. So they're attracted to women that are doers and maybe somewhat controlling and dominating and rigid and aggressive, while the man is being kind of passive and feeling done to and victimized and resentful and needy and taking things personally. So one of the things in working with men, the goal is not to get other people not to treat us bad. Now, that is one thing that we do have to take accountability for. But my experience is the more we become conscious of what it means to be in our conscious masculine, the more we become aware of when we're unconscious or when we're especially in our lower feminine or unconscious feminine. And the more we become aware, the more conscious we become. That's what consciousness is, just the ability to observe self, to be aware of self. And the more we're aware of where we're at, the more we can move up into a very conscious place and choose to be more masculine or more feminine, depending on the situation that we're in.
You know, truly, Robert, one of the major tragedies in today's society is that we have lost sight of what it means to be a man. We've been taught that women want us to yield to them and give them what they want. That's what we've been sort of brainwashed into believing. And then we give things to women. We do these things. We yield to them in the way we think we're supposed to. Then they don't respect us, and they're certainly not sexually attracted to us. And we look around, and it's these guys who are in the conscious masculine that you're talking about who are getting all the women. I totally get that. A couple things I want to add to this conversation, because I think they'll kind of give some dimension to it. You mentioned before that men's libido and men's aggression tend to cause that negative part of masculinity to come out, the part that, you know, women think needs to be done away with, or that caused all the wars, caused all the strife, caused all the tension and bad things to happen. One thing I would add to that is we have this drive for competition. We have this drive to conquer, this drive to win, that I think really is rooted in protection and provision. If we don't kill that saber-toothed tiger and feed our family, some other caveman is, and his family gets fed and mine doesn't. That's why I think we love, you know, if you guys are outside the United States, American football so much. Man, it's a war out there. Guys are just hitting each other, trying to take each other's territory, literally. And at the end of the day, you either win or you lost. And somebody is going to be upset, and someone's going to be embarrassed, and someone's going to be running around victorious, you know, high-fiving the whole crowd. And it's a violent game. And the beauty of it is they can be incredibly rough with each other out there, but no one generally gets killed. It's not like a real war. Even in the context of real war, you get lots of guys who become soldiers and they just really feel into the moment. A lot of times soldiers who have been in combat say, I've never felt so alive as when I was in combat. How do you think this whole idea of being competitive and feeling like we have to conquer plays into this whole thing? Where's the positive and where's the negative there? What can we cultivate and what should we maybe look twice at?
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story and then I'm going to give your listeners a tool. And okay. The story first. When I was in graduate school in the mid-1980s and getting my doctorate in marriage and family therapy, I took child development courses and human development courses that were, in this case, all taught by women, and all women who would probably very proudly say they were feminist. And I'm not saying that to be negative towards feminism, because there's some very positive qualities and good things that came out of it. But there's also, to put it frankly, some bullshit that's come out of it. And one of the things was, is we were taught in these child development courses, they were mostly directed at teachers, social workers, therapists, that little boys and little girls are born exactly the same. our minds, our psyche were tabula rasas, blank slates, and that society writes masculine expectations and behaviors on little boys and feminine expectations and behaviors on little girls. And kind of the emphasis in these courses were, as teachers and social workers and therapists, we need to not get caught up in these social stereotypes, and we need to let little boys and little girls just develop whoever they happen to be. While that was all being said, the most evil, naughty word that you don't dare ever use was competition. These teachers, oh, we got to remove competition from the playground, from the classroom. We can't have them playing games where somebody's a loser or somebody feels bad about themselves. And it was all about cooperation. Cooperation was the good word, team building, cooperative. And I like cooperation. But basically the message was boys bad because boys are competitive. Girls good because girls are cooperative by nature. Now, what is funny, since the 80s, as I look around, I see a bunch of passive, wimpy young men that are trying to be cooperative and a bunch of aggressive and controlling young girls that are competitive as hell. So the issue, again, is not, is competition good or bad, or is cooperation good or bad? The issue, again, is consciousness. And by the way, all research on male-female brain, male and female psychology, all research proves all that was just horseshit, that boys and girls are born differently. I gave my son a Cabbage Patch doll when he was born, and he went on to be starting linebacker and fullback for his high school for 3 years, was in the Marines, did a tour in Iraq, and is now getting his master's degree in wildlife management, and is the primary custodial parent of a beautiful six-year-old daughter who is the most gorgeous little thing you've ever seen and yet isn't afraid of anything. So this kid grew up to be all male, all masculine, even though we were trying to not put stereotypes on him. So there is a difference between masculine and feminine, and that's okay. This doesn't have to be what's good or what's bad. If the masculine in doing is more competitive, because one of the things I talk about with conscious masculine is that it seeks mastery and freedom. We do want to go solve a problem. We do want to go kick some ass. We do want to go, you know, destroy the enemy or build a bridge or cure cancer. Those are all very masculine behaviors. And when you're conscious, competition brings out the best in us, not the worst of us. It's only when we go unconscious. So here's the tool I'm going to give your listeners. If they have a piece of paper, or if they don't, they can just visualize this because it's pretty simple. So if you're just visualizing like a notebook-sized piece of paper, and we're just going to draw it in four quadrants, so a line down the middle and a line across the middle. So we're going to have two columns and two rows. And over in the left upper column is masculine. Right upper column is feminine. And this upper row is going to be consciousness of how we are when we're consciously in our masculine and feminine. Now go down below that middle line to the bottom row. Here is unconscious, that is fear-based, deprivation-based, lizard brain-based, habit-based, superstition-based. And if we break it down simply, if you go to the upper left-hand quadrant, there's the higher masculine. From this place, whether you're a man or a woman, you're going to penetrate the world. It's going to be active. It's going to be powerful. It's going to be disciplined and focused. It's going to provide and protect. It's going to lead. And as I said, it's going to be a problem-solving machine that seeks mastery and freedom. One of the things I've really come to see about this conscious masculine is that it is internally validated by action. And that's one way you can know if you're in your masculine or feminine. If you just feel good because you did it, you did the job, you got it done, you did it well, and you walk away feeling good, you're in your masculine. On the other hand, the feminine is validated externally for something about themselves. That's why women say, you know, do I look pretty? Does my ass look too big? Do you love me? They're seeking external validation for self. So the conscious masculine is validated through action. Now, if you come on down that first column, the masculine column, into the lower part, unconscious, fear, deprivation-oriented, this is where the masculine becomes controlling and dominating and rigid and aggressive and rageful and abusive and destructive. The further you go down that column, think Stalin, Hitler, Idi Amin, Assad, you know, whoever you want to put in there, and just anybody walking the planet that is unconscious but in their masculine doing quadrant. And then just quickly go over to the right upper quadrant. That's the higher feminine, the conscious feminine. And in this place, the feminine is done too, and it seeks connection, and it's open and inviting, and it nurtures a nest, and it seeks validation. And it's all about connection. It's all about the depth of connection. And by nature, it's a security-seeking creature. It feels vulnerable because it can't do. It can only receive, invite, or withdraw. And then if we go further on down into the lower right-hand quadrant, the lower feminine feels helpless, feels victimized, it personalizes everything, it feels resentful, there's a neediness there, it feels trapped, often is passive-aggressive, and when it feels hurt, lower feminine withdraws and typically withdraws their love. So this little tool is really handy for you spotting where you are at any given time. And as I said, most of the men I work with spend most of their time in that lower right hand, lower feminine, where they feel helpless and victimized. They take things personally. They're resentful. They're needy. They want validation all the time. And then they look at those guys that are out there doing and taking action, and they just feel envious of them, and they wonder why those guys are getting the girl. Well, because the feminine is attracted to that doing aspect. Now, unfortunately, the feminine can also be attracted to the lower masculine. You know, guys will say, why are women attracted to bad boys? Well, they aren't so much attracted to the bad boy. They're attracted to the fact that the guy is doing, right? There's something going on with that guy rather than him just being passive and waiting for the woman to do all the doing.
Well, lower masculine would be more attractive to a woman who's living in her lower feminine,
of course, for example,
than a man who's neuter, because it's still masculine.
I think
a lot of guys understand that. Even bad masculinity is better than no masculinity. It's almost like making a bad decision is better than making no decision. It's kind of like a meta version of that.
And when guys say, well, how come women are attracted to the bad boy? We'll say, number one, it's usually women with low self-esteem that are unconscious that are attracted to the bad boy, and maybe yep. It feels familiar to them. And again, they're attracted to the fact that the guy is doing something. He creates some kind of emotional tension for the woman, and he does it through acting. You create absolutely no emotional or physical tension for a woman by being passive, by waiting for her to come to you, for seeking her validation or her approval or trying to please her. That does nothing to turn a woman on.
A bad boy may get a woman in the short term, but let's check in 6 months from now and see how that relationship's doing. The high quality relationship is going to be between two people, I think, Robert, who you would term to be one living in their upper masculine and one living in their higher feminine.
And the beauty is, and yes, to answer your question, yes. And the beauty is, when you're conscious, being in your masculine and or feminine is a very fluid process, and it actually creates what I call a reciprocal relationship. And I'll give you an example of this. Again, working with many of the men I work with that are very passive and pleasing and trying to make women happy, and they tend to get attracted to women that are somewhat dominant and controlling, and I can understand that. Think about it for a minute. Guys, put yourself in a woman's place. And by the way, when I say some of this stuff, the generalizations about women being security-seeking creatures, I used to kind of expect a bolt of pink lightning to strike me down because, no, woman doesn't need a man. But Maureen Dowd, a writer for the New York Times and a feminist, made a quote in one of her columns a year or two ago that said, women by nature are physically vulnerable and emotionally and hormonally complex. Okay, that sounds like she's saying they're security-seeking creatures. And so that's okay. The feminine is a security-seeking creature. So guys, think about it. If you were walking the planet feeling physically vulnerable and emotionally and hormonally complex, and everywhere you turned, there was no security system. There's no clan, no tribe, no family, no dad, no boyfriend, no husband that was actually looking out for your best interest. Now, if that's what you bumped into time and time again, and maybe every man you ever bumped into used you and then abandoned you, well, that's going to really hurt. And so a lot of women, because they can, because they're competent, become fairly masculine. They start taking control and taking charge of their life, and then they go out there and wonder why they can't meet a good man. Well, they're so busy controlling and being in charge of their life, there's no room for a man to step in and actually, you know, have a positive influence. But so here's what happens. Guy meets a girl. Let's say the guy's kind of passive, and let's say the woman's kind of dominant, and the woman's more in her lower masculine, guy's more in his lower feminine. He wants to try to make her happy, impress her, do it right, not upset her, and he thinks by being that good man, she'll like him and love him and want to be with him. Well, for the woman, maybe if she likes the guy, there's nothing to light her switch, but she says, okay, let's go. And she climbs in the driver's seat and starts driving. Well, he gets in the passenger seat, thinks, well, she wants to drive, I'll let her. I'll let her be in charge. I'll say, what do you want to do tonight, dear? Or do you want to do this? Or would this make you happy? And so he sits over there in the passenger seat, staring out the window, listening to Katy Perry on the radio, and he doesn't even dare change it because maybe she liked Katy Perry, so he doesn't even want to change it. And she just keeps driving. And finally, after a while, she just gets bored as hell with him, and he just keeps trying harder to please her by being the good, passive man. And there's no reciprocity. There's no excitement. There's no tension. There's no polarity. But here's what I found. If the most masculine person of the pair will get in the front seat and start driving, in the driver's seat, and he opens the door for her and lets her into the passenger seat, he'll start driving. And at some point, he can say, well, tell you what, why don't you drive for a little bit? Or she can even say, would you like me to drive for a little bit? And they can trade positions now. And she can go into her masculine, and he can go into his feminine. And that works because she knows they're not going to stay that way. He's going to say, okay, pull over the next rest stop, and I'll drive. And he'll go back to his masculine, and she can go back to her feminine. So actually, when you have the most masculine person, which is typically the guy, if he will set the tone and take the lead with consciousness and love and attentiveness, it actually creates greater reciprocity or switching of roles in a relationship than if the most feminine creature has to take control and the most masculine creature just stays passive. Nothing ever changes. Nothing ever goes anywhere. There's no polarity, no sparks, no excitement, no fun.
Yeah, he's still the one who's leading, even though he's leading in her best interest, which means letting her take the wheel sometimes. It makes perfect sense to me, and I hope to guys listening. Man, I have so much to talk about based on everything you just said. First of all, I can't help but remember how just this past week, Cincinnati Bengals were on national television playing NFL football, and some really, really boneheaded powers that be inside their front office decided that the team should come out on the field, you know, in a frenzy of fan adoration to the song Roar by Katy Perry.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, my.
And guys in the stands, literally, you could hear a groan when the song started. They interviewed guys afterwards who were at the game. And one guy said, yeah, a Pittsburgh Steelers fan was next to me and he laughed his ass off at me, pointing at me because of the song we were playing when our players took the field. Man, that's just horrible. And it's not a masculine song. I mean, to have Katy Perry represent, you know, something as masculine as football is just crazy. Couldn't help but think of that. What would cause a whole team to vote that in? It could only mean that masculinity is seriously skewed, even in the minds of people who are doing something very masculine, which is the NFL.
That is bizarre. Actually, last Sunday, I was in Yankee Stadium with an 88-year-old friend of mine, a woman who's just an avid Yankee fan. And I was going to take her and her husband, but her husband passed away in March. So we're at Yankee Stadium, and they were having a farewell tribute to Mariano Rivera, their closer of the last several years. And they had all kinds of guest speakers. And they always played Metallica's Enter Sandman whenever he'd come in the game. Well, sure. Before it started, there was a bandstand out there in center field with a drum set and some microphones. And I looked at my friend and my girlfriend and I said, they're going to have Metallica play live. And sure enough, here's Metallica playing live, Enter Sandman, as Mariano Rivera comes out to, you know, receive all this adoration. So yeah, we either go with Katy Perry or Metallica. You know, let's pick one, okay?
Yeah, you got to love how the Yankees have more money than God. Unless you're an Orioles fan like me, then you don't love it so much.
Yeah.
But I digress. The other thing I wanted to add is you're talking about this whole idea of higher and lower masculine and feminine. I hadn't ever given much thought to there being a lower feminine, but I think it makes perfect sense. One of the little audio programs that guys have told me they appreciate so much is actually buried within my larger program, The Man's Approach. And it's called 14 Ways Women Define Masculinity. And one of the major tenets of that program that guys have thanked me for, Robert, over the years is that I absolutely make an objective case that masculinity is built around virtue instead of vice. All of those things that are in the lower masculine, as you're referring to them, mm-hmm. And I love that metaphor so much, are actually twisted vices of good masculinity.
Yes.
You're talking about a woman being receptive, but then when she feels helpless, that's the vice. Whereas a masculine person, that competition that seeks to protect a family can become competition that seeks to destroy innocent people if it becomes a vice. But what women are attracted to, the part that makes men worthy, is that virtue. The vice is a perversion of it. And to think that masculinity is only the perversion without remembering that the virtue had to be present to begin with in order to be perverted at all is such an incredible travesty, such a tragedy in this society. And, you know, it really is just man bashing. It's like when men say, oh, all women are the same. They're all gold diggers. They're all greedy. You're just looking at the lower feminine and forgetting that there had to be a virtuous woman. There had to be female virtue in order for that perversion to be possible. One of the shining examples to me, and I've had people begin to argue this with me, and then when they see what I'm thinking, really go away scratching their head. That is this. I think a masculine virtue that people often overlook is compassion. I think compassion is masculine because, you know, you mentioned Hitler and Pol Pot and Stalin and these guys who did a lot of destruction. Who was going to say enough is enough? These people are suffering. The suffering has got to stop. But a man who could go do something about it. It took a man to stand up to that evil. Compassion is the protection of those who can't protect themselves by someone who feels their pain and wants it to end. And I think compassion is masculine. And I've had people really think about that and decide maybe they don't want to argue with me. And I think that should be a tremendous, tremendous encouragement to men everywhere. You see, guys, I've had this conversation with feminists before, and again, they go scratching their head. One time I remember we were traveling, we were in a foreign country, and we met a couple women who were very feminist, and they were from England, where, you know, a lot of women have started wearing the pants, unfortunately. A lot of guys are passive. And they were saying the same thing you said before, Robert. Oh, yeah, this masculinity and femininity, it's just a meme designed to keep women down, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'll tell you, as a man who has raised infant daughters and an infant son, I can tell you definitively, those little kids acted like females and male respectively by the time they were 4 months old. Mm-hmm. And that can't be something we consciously taught them. There's no room for reasoning in a four-month-old mind. That little boy of mine just started acting male, and those two little girls just started acting female. It's in there. It's genetic. And what I told these two women was the following. Well, you know, I do believe in masculinity and femininity, but I actually believe women have the higher calling. And they looked at me like I had two heads. But what do you mean? You know, femininity is designed to keep women weak and, you know, needing a man around. I go, well, I think of it this way. A woman brings joy, comfort, nurturing, life, happiness, fun. You know, girls just want to have fun. All of those are feminine qualities. I've said before on this show, I get a lot of guys who want a giggly, fun woman. That's the first thing they cite that they want in a woman. Either that or, you know, they want her to have a nice ass and big boobs. After that,
yeah.
I want her to be giggly and fun. And I told these two women, and I'll tell you now, and the guys listening, that's what makes life great. All this stuff that women do, all these feminine gifts, as David Data would call them, those are the things that make life worth living. That's what we hope to come home to after a hard day's work. Now, men, what are we for? We are the enablers of feminine gifts. We provide, we protect. We're the ones who engage in the competition. We're the ones who go and do the winning and the losing and the fighting and the maintaining. And we provide and we protect so that women don't have to. I dated a lot of single moms who had to go to work. Some of them worked two jobs, then come home and take care of the kids. Their lives were in shambles. Their lives were a disarray, and they didn't like it. And, you know, most of the women I've met, even if they wanted to go succeed at work and whatever, they really, once they met a guy and they started making babies, would really rather be at home and do something productive with their lives, with their skills that didn't involve them leaving their children all day when it comes right down to it. And I know a lot of women would disagree with that. Fine, more power to them. But I've seen it happen too many times, even with really ambitious women, for me to think otherwise. So yes, we're the providers, protectors, enablers of feminine gifts, and it's those feminine gifts that women bring to the table that make life so great. But we as guys, hey, we love our role, we relish it, and you know what? Here's the clincher. We are the beneficiaries of the feminine gifts. We get to enjoy what they bring to us. It's their gift to us. So yeah, man, the dance comes full circle. It just works. It's a great design.
Well, and let's use this quadrant, this diagram, to even illustrate what you're talking about. If you have it written down or if you just have it visualized in your head, the left column, the masculine column, when you get down lower, the masculine is unconscious, doesn't have compassion, is paranoid, narcissistic, whatever. It can do great damage. And so, for example, when feminists complained about all the damage men had done in the world, they were talking about that lower masculine. It did exist. It has done great damage. It's still doing great damage today. But here's what happened. Because we labeled that as masculine, we labeled lower masculine as masculine, we threw out the baby with the bathwater. We threw out all masculine, where all masculine is bad. All male sexuality is bad. Everything that has to do with a man's penis is bad. We threw it all out. And so men in around the world, especially in Western culture, have grown up with no clear visual of what it means to be masculine. In fact, all we can think is that masculine is bad. But it, also, if you think about it, even in terms of feminism, when women started rising up and saying, women deserve equal pay for equal jobs, they deserve these rights and these privileges, and it was all true. If you think about it, it was primarily male politicians, male judges, male university leaders that said, you know what, they're right. We've got to change the system. So the system changed not because a bunch of women burned their bras or did sit-ins or marches or refused to cook dinner or whatever. The system changed because compassionate men in that upper masculine changed the system. So if we're going to rile against masculinity, or rail against masculinity, masculinity has done great good on this planet. And then just one other thing about the feminine, as you were talking about the feminine gifts. When I went on my book tours 10 years ago, I went back to New York, met with my editor, a woman, and after a book signing, they took me out to dinner. I went out with her and her fiance. He was also in the book industry, and another couple, some friends of theirs, a woman and a man, that were both attorneys. They were all in, like, at that time, mid to late 30s, all professional. Three out of four had never owned a car because they grew up in New York. So very New York, educated, professional, all four of them were. And both women made a comment while we're out at dinner. And these very professional, accomplished women, one a book editor for Barnes & Noble and the other one an attorney, they said, I've done everything I thought I was supposed to do, you know, to go out and be satisfied and have this career and penetrate the world, basically. And they said, I'd really like to stay home and have kids. And they both felt like they're saying something heretical or wrong or sinful that they wanted to stay home and have kids. Now, is that what every woman wants? No. Should they all want it? No. But what happened is that women bought into the same mythology that we men did, i.e. that women had to go out and have a career to be satisfied and maleness was all bad and we men should figure out how to be nicer guys and treat the women well. But here's what also the women got robbed of. And this is maybe one of the biggest takeaways for me of realizing how the conscious male can penetrate and the conscious feminine is penetrated and accepting. When a man shows up with a woman and brings his full presence, physically, emotional, intellectually, spiritually, and she trusts him, she opens up to him. She's receptive. And the more deeply he penetrates her, the deeper her emotional feminine bliss. And the more she feels that bliss and trusts him, the more she opens up. And the more she opens up, the further he can penetrate her. And the feminine will experience a bliss when being penetrated that we men will never even fathom. We just don't even know what that is like. And what tends to happen in women is it creates what I call the feminine cloud of desire, where that's just all they want all the time, is just to be penetrated by their man, sexually, emotionally, physically, every bit of him. They want to be penetrated all the time. And that's actually when we men get kind of scared and go running, because that scares us that we're going to get consumed by that feminine cloud of desire. But I promise you, the closest thing that we men can experience to feminine bliss is the experience of knowing, hey, I did that. I gave her that. I took her there.
Yeah. I think a lot of times when that femininity is woken up by a man who just makes her feel like a woman, she does get drunk off of it because she's never experienced that before. And she realizes this is what I was born to do. This is my birthright. And I've reclaimed it myself. And yeah, she starts bestowing those feminine gifts on a man. And the man's like, yeah, this is great. I did it. I brought out this feminine in a woman. You know, if you see the sex advice from guys to other guys, it's always how to give women orgasms. We get pleasure from pleasuring women because we're providing and protecting for them, doing what's in their best interest, and that comes back to us as satisfaction. I think that's great.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of wrap up this conversation, end it in a way that I think is perfect. I'm remembering an interview I did about 5 years ago with a guy who's a men's rights expert. And he said something so poignant at the end of the interview with him that I never forgot it. And like you, Robert, I'm starting to see it happen. And he said, you know, when men regain their position in this society that they once held, you know, as truly equal to women, you know, not being denigrated and thought of as bad, it will be the women who decide enough is enough and advocate for us. And I think it's true. I think women want real men back, and they're starting to be the ones who sound off against these crazy TV commercials, even for like Home Depot, where the man is getting basically made fun of by the wife and his little teenage daughter. And all these TV commercials where men are made to look like idiots and women are made to look strong. Women were the first ones to say, you know, that's ridiculous. Enough's enough. And they decided they weren't going to buy those products anymore. And you've seen the marketing change. And you've seen men being looked at in favorable positions. You're seeing more positive male role models, even in TV and in movies, you know, notwithstanding some of the shows out there where men still aren't looked at in a very good light. I don't think that's ever going to change. But, you know, you're seeing more TV commercials, for example, that are as willing to make fun of women comedically. And I think it's all coming full circle. And I think the work of guys like you, Robert, are helping make that happen every bit as much. So before we close this show, I want to give you guys a chance to go check out more from Dr. Robert Glover. I've set up a special URL for you, and that's www.thechickwhisperer.com/Glover. And that's G-L-O-V-E. It's like the word glove with an R on the end, or lover with a G on the front, whichever you choose.
There you go.
So go check that out. You'll find out all about his first book, which is No More Mr. Nice Guy, which is just a juggernaut, man. On Amazon. It's still like in the 3500s overall, and the book's over 10 years old. Man, that's just a really, really popular book. You guys should check that out. And also check out where Robert's holding seminars on being in the conscious masculine, and see what his new projects are too. So Dr. Robert Glover, thanks once again for joining us today. We had a great conversation. Maybe we need to have you back for my power sessions, guys, so we can talk even more about this.
Scott, I had a great time, and thanks for having me on your show, and look forward to connecting with you again.
Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter, guys, by going to www.thechickwhisperer.com also, because you'll get more of this great content every single day when you do so, and it's all free, free, free. Until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009 by XMY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for The Chick Whisperer Podcast.